Thanks to Bill for another great big band music show here on WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM, the station making waves from Henry Ford Community College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to the new WHFR Journal. Yes, we are digging into the dirt. We're finding where the bones are and the skeletons, wherever they are. We are local news and views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronick, and happy to be with you today on Friday, and it is February the 6th. 2009. One of the great things about today was that we are just completing on campus the Alternative Energy Summit. And I think it is the first time there is a green expo of information and suppliers and things that in this area. Although I'm told that one is coming up in March, and we'll tell you where that is. I don't think it's in Cobo Hall, but it might be, and that's going to be pretty big, too. But it's about time. Chicago's had green fests several times a year, at least twice a year I know of, at their Navy Pier in downtown Chicago. And we are behind the times here in Michigan. And one of the things that I learned this morning, and we're going to find out more about this, too, is that the good news is we can catch up. Yeah, we can catch up. We can be part of this. And what it means is we can have the jobs back, the manufacturing jobs back, if we are bold enough. And so there is some interesting ideas that we want to share with that. Just a little more background, and I'll play an interview that I've done that I did this morning with one of the two keynote speakers. Actually, there are three keynote speakers, if you include our own mayor here in Dearborn, Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. And he said some nice things about WHFR and our energy independence project that we've pitched to him and to the college, and we hope it can go forward so that we can be off the grid, that you can depend on us day or night, any time of the year, and we won't even need any electricity in order to keep going. So we hope to be, you might say, the voice of Dearborn in the case of an emergency, a power outage, so that as long as you have batteries in your radios and in your cars can still start up, you'll be able to listen to us. So it was great to see Mayor O'Reilly there and have mentioned WHFR. And as I said, one of the two keynote speakers, Peter Sinclair, was speaking there this morning. In the breakout sessions, just to mention the companies that were there, Ford Motor Company that was there, General Motors were there. They were giving free test drives this morning. We told you about this last week. If you forgot about it or missed it, I'm sorry, folks. This stuff is happening all the time, and you got to listen more closely, take notes, put it in your day planner, and get on down. You know, in fact, it was a little sidelight. Ford brought one of their Escape hybrids, I understand. And the president of our college, Dr. Mee, who actually owns and drives every day an Escape hybrid, she donated her car for test drives, too. I thought that was very brave of her. and as well as, again, I don't know how many GM vehicles there were. I know there was a large, like, Tahoe, some sort of monster truck that was a hybrid that they had out there. And I don't think they had a Volt, since that's still really in pre-production. I think they probably brought with them, because I saw a Saturn dealer represented here too, Saturn of Plymouth, as a matter of fact. They probably brought one of their View hybrids. That's their small SUV. I think it's just a little bigger size than, just slightly bigger than the Ford Escape, Ford Mariner, in terms of physical body size. And DTE Energy was there talking about their programs for energy efficiencies and how they're contributing. Baylor Young Company, they're into geothermal and hybrid heating for your home or business. Dr. Jerry Moroff, author and researcher from a company called Endless Energy. Melanie McCoy from the city of Wyandotte itself, because they've actually undertaken, at their own instigation, wind and solar projects in Wyandotte, and they hope to do many more. So and I didn't get a chance to catch her presentation. Maybe we can invite her on this show. I've got a few other names, too, boy, oh boy, that we're going to try to cover this more with you, because there's nothing that can matter most, I think, than the environment all around us. And we all want to save money, but we also want to create new jobs, don't we? So by all means, Got to pay attention to this stuff, folks. Right now, they're just finishing up the legislative panel where a number of key elected representatives were getting around and talking about their comments and thoughts. And again, we're not able to share that with you today either, because I'm here and they're there. But can't be in two places at once, I guess. But other than that, we will talk to some of them again. Gino Polidori was there from this area. He was there for the first session, I know, and hopefully he stayed. Because, you know, our legislature, even though they're not part-time, they get Fridays off. So they can get back home to their home communities and do community handshaking and so on. And so what I'd like to do is share with you these comments that I record with Peter Sinclair. Just 4 minutes, folks. No big deal. After he made his two presentations, he did the keynote address, and he also did a breakout session. By the way, he was one of the presenters out of quite a few that they had going for Vice President Al Gore's climate project, former Vice President Al Gore's climate project. So in order to spread the word all around the country, the show and tell, the slideshows that they made into an Inconvenient Truth documentary, Sinclair was one of these presenters, so he knows the topic very well. And listen up here. Here it comes. Peter Sinclair on the station Making Waves, WHFR.FM. We're here today at the Alternative Energy Summit at Henry Ford Community College, and we're speaking with Peter Sinclair, who was one of the two keynote speakers this morning. Peter, thank you for being with us today here at the conference. I thought, for the sake of the WHFR Journal, where we cover just local issues, tell us maybe a couple of suggestions how the average person can help to not only fight climate change, but also to help with energy usage reductions.
Well, this is a great time, given the economy, to if you're looking for some place to put your money, that's a good investment that will pay off. Increasing the efficiency of your home, making it a tighter seal, new windows, check for air leaks, get an energy audit. Most of the fixes are very, very simple, and you can do yourself, or you can have one of the local contractors do it for a modest amount of money, and there you're creating local jobs and circulating money in the community. And the payoff for this is 20%, 30%, 40% or more. So this is a great thing to do in an economic downtime, whether you're a homeowner or a business, because you're preparing for better days ahead, and you're putting your money to work in a way that's really going to help you and the community and the planet. People also talk about the light bulbs, the CFC bulbs. Some people are concerned about the, there's a little bit of toxic material in them. I don't think it's particularly a problem, but for those that do, wait a couple years. The LED bulbs are coming, which are even much more efficient and don't have any of the toxic issues. So we're going to be covered on that, and that's going to be a revolution in lighting in the next 5 to 10 years. If you've got an old beat-up clunker of a car like I do, my advice, drive that baby into the ground, because in about 2 to 3 to 5 years, there is going to be a multitude of choices of high efficiency, in some cases all electric or plug-in hybrid vehicles that are going to be coming available, and hopefully one to suit every taste. So, drive that clunker into the ground and save your pennies, because lots of good choices are coming.
And we'd especially want to look for maybe, as you talked about today, the plug-in hybrids of a year or two in the future, the Chevy Volt, but I think the Prius is supposed to be plug-in, and Ford is hoping to have a plug-in hybrid, too, in a couple of years, or an all-electric. So that's what we're specifically looking for in a couple of years, right?
Right, right. We're going to see that, and one of the key points in my talk is how we are going to integrate those into our electrical grid. This is very important. We know we are not going to have to build more power plants to supply these cars because we're going to be charging them primarily at night when demand is really low. So that's a key point, and I want to expand on this for as many audiences as I can because Detroit needs to understand this cornerstone technology. So, and I'm very enthusiastic about it.
And we should do whatever we can to encourage state government, if not also federal government, to set some standards and get moving like California has done, right?
Yeah, the most important thing, really, this is the bottom line. The most important thing you can do is write your representative. Governor Granholm this week has kicked off an initiative that could pole vault Michigan to the front of the pack for this industrial revolution that is beginning now. And she is going, already she is coming under heavy, heavy fire from the people that would like us to stay with 19th century technologies like coal. And she's going to need all the support she can get to help move us into the direction that the rest of the nation and the rest of the world is already going.
Thank you very much, Peter Sinclair, for being here today.
Thank you. Great.
And this is Jay Kornack back live in the WHFR studios. If it's Friday and 1 to 2 p.m., Friday the 6th of February, then and we are here live. And you might be listening, or you can listen again if you want to the podcast version of the show. After 2 p.m. each Friday after the show is over, it becomes an MP3 file on our website, whfr.fm. Well, I'm joined in the WHFR studios by Ned Apigian, who is a Dearborn Heights resident and has background in city planning as well as being a practicing architect too. So just want to say welcome, Ned, but unfortunately you weren't able to make the energy conference today. Do you have any energy thoughts, or did anything come across your mind as you were listening to this interview with Peter Sinclair?
Well, I'm just wondering what it is that Governor Jennifer Granholm is proposing.
Okay, she had a state of good
Unless
point.
Unless you got no, the insight into that.
Well, I do, although I was intending to watch it Tuesday of this week. She did her State of the State address.
I missed it.
And that was presented on television and WDET. And part of it was that she made the plug, which she has made for several years, actually, that we've got to invest in green energy. We've got to have tighter standards for energy efficiency on the state level. And we have to get into the manufacturing side of these new technologies. We already, you know, we're hoping, maybe you heard, Ned, that
I heard about the batteries.
Well, the General Motors is working with the U of M Ann Arbor. Is they're going to build a battery plant right here in Michigan to provide the batteries for the Volt. And it will be one of those really high-tech plants and will give jobs to people. But we need to get more involved with wind and geothermal and solar. Why? Because other people are already. They're deeply into it. And one of the things that Peter presented was how far California has come in reducing the state government's use of energy and reducing pollution. And just because the government got together and or a few, I'm sure a few petition drives, you know, had some ballot issues. California has a lot of ballot issues that come from the people.
It's called petition government.
Yeah, well, and it's almost too confusing because sometimes they pass rules that are kind of one on top of the other.
And contradictory.
Contradictory. But whatever it was, California is very, very far ahead in reducing its energies. And it's primarily because, and I know libertarians and conservative Republicans are going to hate this idea, but it is a proven fact that in the states that have these tight guidelines, they have saved energy, they've increased jobs. And one good example he gave was the state of Colorado, where I think it was a petition drive went in place saying that you know, the energy industry, the electrical power producing industry in Colorado, would have to clean up their act, have 10% less reduction in, I think, given 10 years. Okay. As it turns out, and they campaigned against that, the Colorado Energy people, I can't remember the name of the company, Xtel, I think was the name of the company, and they said, oh, no, it's unproven to go to solar and wind, and it's going to cost a fortune, and we, you know, got to vote it down. Well, the people voted for it. And what happened was, well, their energy company had to get started making these improvements and getting to the goal. They beat the goal in only 8 years, and now they are suggesting that the goal be changed to 20% reduction in another 5 years. Why? Because the energy company now says, we found a way we can even make a profit on this, even though, because they're selling more electricity all the time, but they don't have to pay for oil anymore. They're getting it from wind and geothermal, you see. So their investment in energy production from these renewable sources reduced their cost in the long run. And so they're all in favor of it now. I mean, that energy company in Colorado is saying we can even do better. But where did it come from? The state, and I don't care, it could be the federal government too.
The people in this case.
In this case, it was the people who said it's about time, and we've got to be ahead of the game. And now they're just one of those shining examples, along with California. It can be done in Michigan, but by golly, it has to be done as an edict, either by petition drive or by our state legislatures. It has been proven. Now, you know, for those of us, and I'm somewhat a libertarian at times, although definitely independent-minded on many subjects, but one of the things you got to do as a government is set certain standards and criteria that everybody can follow. And one of them is in regard to the environment, pollution controls and quality of air and water and so on, but also in our food. We got to get to that one sometime soon.
The peanut butter crisis.
Yeah, the problem with national FDA regulations that even if they have them, they can't very well enforce them, it seems.
Well, if you watch the FCC, not the FCC's, the Security and Exchange Commission.
SEC, yeah.
The SEC's congressional hearing, you begin to wonder about all these bureaucrats. They have a wonderful way of not answering questions and not being responsible for anything.
Well, you're afraid if you really do anything new and different, somebody's going to not like it, or it might be a complete failure too, and then you won't get reelected. But you got to take the bullet here, and we're not the first, you know, in this. Now, the examples are out there, the examples that have worked. And Peter presented numerous statistics about the increase in jobs. And, of course, he showed a wind turbine generator and the gearing. He said, you think we can build these in Michigan? You know, it's all like gears and transmissions and mechanical stuff. And if we can build cars, we can build these things needed for this new energy generation stuff. But somebody has got to start doing it that way.
All you have to do is go to Germany and watch them do it.
Well, he pointed out is that the wind generation equipment used in Colorado comes from Denmark. Right. It's made in Denmark. Now, it turns out that Germany, who's also done a great job as a country, they don't make enough solar panels in Germany. They're buying them primarily from vendors in the U.S., not from Michigan, but they're buying the solar panels that they need for their additional retrofits right here. So we do have sort of a worldwide recognition on the solar panels we're producing now. But as it turns out, China has 35 new companies that are producing solar panels that will be out there within the next 6 months. And so they're going to corner the market.
Imagine the different ways you could disguise them into looking like something else.
Well, I understand that.
What a challenge that would
right.
be.
Even on some of the cars, whether it's a Chevy Volt, there was an option, I think, for the Chevy Volt that they're proposing. It's not here yet, you know, not until 2010 or 2011.
Panel.
The sun panel, the solar panel on the roof that would, in this case, not power the car, but it would just produce enough electricity.
Recharge the battery.
To run the air conditioning.
Well, that's something.
Right, because that's, you know, and that's one of the big drains on power of a car.
Absolutely.
That actually hurts your gas economy.
In the summer.
In the summer is when you turn that air conditioner on. And so the solar panel, assuming it's the summer and you need air conditioning, means the sun must be out. It must be a pretty hot day. That's when just the roof size alone of a relatively small sedan, if that was a solar panel, true, it might cost you $500 to $800 at the factory for that option. But your air conditioner doesn't have to be powered that way anymore. And most people don't use their air conditioners in the winter, you know. And it'll save them money in the long run, too.
It depends on the region, you know. Of course. Today, you'll buy a car that's got an engine block heater. Now, if you live in Florida, you don't need a car with an engine block heater, but you might if you lived in Minnesota. So these options will be appearing on vehicles depending on where they're sold.
A couple points from Peter's presentation that wasn't part of the four-minute interview I also want to mention is that Michigan has a great potential in terms of two kinds of power, and it has to do with storing power. Two different technology. One is, it's kind of interesting, is that, and this is right now it's happening, 18,000 megawatts, 18,000 million watt electrical production. And how do they get that electricity for Ludington, Michigan? They get it by using energy to pump water into a big reservoir lake from Lake Michigan. And they store it up when they need it for peak energy time, which is, I learned, from 12 or 1 in the afternoon to 6 p.m.
Do they heat the water?
No, they don't have to heat it. They just let it come back out over a mini waterfall, and they create hydroelectric power from it. And it's more than what it took to pump the water in the first place. So, in other words, they create a stored reservoir of hydroelectric power for when they need it, for the peak times. 18,000 million watts. Now, if I remember so it's 18 billion watts that seems wrong. But anyway, it's a lot of electricity, and that's been going on for years. Now, Port Huron area, they've got a huge, and he showed slides of this, a huge number of wind towers which are producing electricity. A whole grid, I saw at least on one high elevation photo, it looked like 12 of them. And he said each tower that has these huge blades on it, which turn when it gets windy, is taller than the Washington Monument. Well, how tall is that? 300 feet.
That's pretty tall.
Yeah, and he said, you know, we need people to help service this technology. And he showed a picture taken from a helicopter or whatever. There's a man up there on the top of this, like, motor drive behind the blade. I mean, he's up there,
doing something.
300 feet off the ground. But, yeah, I mean, so you got to be somewhat brave, I guess. He had a safety wire on it.
I'm sure.
But
there must be a mechanism to haul yourself up.
I'm sure there's a little bucket or something that just pulls you right up. You don't have to climb it, you know, with a rope or something.
You know what I thought about in Michigan, because of the currents in the lake. We talk about currents in the ocean moving things.
Tide power.
Yeah, Great Lakes, it seems like there's an opportunity for that. It would depend on where you would like to locate that turbine, depending where. You know, these things are pretty deep too, and
I think you have to be next to the oceans for tide power to really to be effective. And the plants are expensive to put in, but it's all free energy once you get it working. You know, so here's the other thing though, and I didn't know about this one, is that you can store underground in caverns.
You need some sort of capacitor to hold such power once you. But what would it be?
Well, underground, he was talking about pumping compressed air. Oh, it's the wind machines. They pull wind down, and they save it highly compressed in a natural cavern underground. And when they need it, it comes back up, and it's like heated because it's under so much pressure. They hold it down under a lot of pressure. It's heated, and then that'll turn turbines up above. And he said Michigan has geologically, I guess, a lot of caverns underground. He says we're the second base state in the whole country for this kind of storage of wind power. Just geologically, we've got a lot of these caverns which aren't too far down for that. And so but this is the most exciting thing, Ned, and just for our listeners too.
That's a relatively simple technology.
Yes,
if you can catch air pressure and then with a valve trap it and build the pressure so that you can release air pressure drives things as well
later, right? That's it. Well, this other thing is about hybrid and electric cars. He pointed out, folks, that number one, you're not going to have these 8 extra coal plants that are proposed for Michigan. Oh, you need all the power for the plug-in cars. No you won't because of energy efficiencies and energy reductions, which are all within current technology, I learned.
Where did the 8 come from? Who proposed that?
Well, DTE or somebody.
They're saying that.
Well, we need 8 more coal plants, and there's no such thing, in spite of what some people have heard, as clean coal. I mean, they're the number one cause of the pollution in our air, which is disturbing the environment so much. But, I mean, some people, even if you don't care about the climate thing, we need jobs, and we have to improve our economy. So it means we need a cheaper way to operate. And what we're talking about here, folks, is just that. So even if you don't think that we've got to save the environment, and I hope you don't think that, because the scientists are pretty much unified. 99 out of 100 scientists know that there's problems that we are causing with our environment that'll come back to really be terrible in either a couple of years or a half century at most. But even if you don't go along with that, you want to save money yourself, from your daily budget on energy cost. And, of course, none of us want to be dependent on that foreign oil stuff or have to go to war again maybe someday to get some oil so we can light our houses. But the hybrid electric thing.
Most of our foreign oil comes from Canada, so that's a red herring these politicians keep talking about as a joke.
Yeah, of course, that oil, I understand, is from... is it some sort of a shale mining? It's pretty costly.
They've
got a lot of it, but they've got to refine
it. Shale mining in Canada, that's right.
Right. They've got to refine it. So it's not like the bubbly stuff that's easily refined. And
they don't sell it to us. They'll sell it to the Japanese.
Well, yeah. But, okay. You got your hybrid. You got your electric car in 2 years, okay? You have to plug it into the grid at night to charge it up, although the volt only takes 3 hours for a full charge. But... and a standard outlet, we're told. But, okay.
First, I wonder what that mechanism is. I wonder, can you actually end up with 120-volt plug-in on one side, and then you have another kind of device into the car? Whether we're going to put a whole lot of electricians to work.
He's excited me here, folks. Okay, this is... well, first of all, we now have coal plants, and we got nuclear plant down in Fermi, and that's where we're getting most of our electricity from, folks, right now in this area. However, at nighttime, they can't turn these things off. They can't turn them down. They're always generating electricity, but nobody's using it. It's like being wasted at night right now, folks. So if you're trying to plug your car in at night, that's low energy usage times right now. The peak time, again, is 1 to 6 every afternoon, especially Monday through Friday, for whatever reasons, for energy. So what happens is, first of all, we're just losing all that energy anyway from the nuclear plant and from the gas plant, from the coal plants at night. So you don't need the extra coal plants, because when you're going to use it to charge is going to be that way. Also, most cars, and this is true for hybrids also, they're parked 96% of the time. You don't use your car every minute of each day. So out of each day, 96% of the time, you're not driving your car anywhere. So what they're saying is that wherever you go with that car, you plug in at work, you plug in at home for recharging at night, the battery can be used to provide energy for other people. And that's right, through the grid, because they're going to be putting in, this is news to me, but I just learned this morning, DTE is going to be putting in smart energy meters in everybody's house in the next year or two. And these will have an internet connection, and you can go to a website and see the readout, the use of electricity in your house on a daily basis. But it also provides them a way to monitor what you're doing with your car. They can talk to your electric car. And if they need power for their grid for something, they will use it from what was already stored in the battery in your car. And you'll get paid back if they need it. You get cash back, it's called cash back hybrids, on your monthly electric bills if they need your battery power to help the grid somewhere else. And this is just doable, folks. I mean, this is not pie in the sky. Well, it's never going to happen. Yes, it will. It's coming. So it's the most wonderful thing, and it's all technology we know of now. Sure, batteries can get better and more efficient, yeah. But so he's not a gloom and doom person. He knows that there might be some climate problems, but we can try to move away or stop some of the climate problems, definitely by reducing energy from the non-renewable sources. And with the newer technologies that we're looking at right now, and which some people already have in place, we'll be making money on our hybrid cars. They'll be giving us money back, just because they'll, at times when it's needed, they'll take some electricity out of the batteries while the car is not being used 96% of the time, and they'll pay us for it. It's just so cool. It's just so fantastic. And
well, you need a battery. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a battery in the house that you stored your electricity when you weren't using it?
I'm sure we will. Yeah.
So that's a giant capacitor we'd need somehow, you know.
Right. Yeah. I think initially they're thinking that the houses could just send their if there's solar panels on the house, it might be able to go right into the battery in your hybrid. But that would have limited storage, so you'd probably need, eventually everybody's house would have to have some
You remember 40 years ago, what we had was the electric house. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Now, what happened with it was that it was too expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, just imagine, instead of oil, instead of gas, that we could have, if we had enough electrical power, and it was...
And wind, yeah.
And we were able to store it, we could have an electric house.
Yep.
So, and somebody will say, well, how would you do that? Well, you did that 40 years ago. It's just that the bill got too high.
Yeah.
Now, if you could produce enough electricity,
yeah. Now,
then you don't have the oil and gas problem.
Right. We have a lot of natural gas reserves in this country, too, but that's getting more expensive. And once that's gone, it's all gone, too, just like coal may be all gone. And I mean, England, for example, they had a lot of coal mines for a while. They have no coal mines at all. They have no coal anymore in the country, the whole country of England. And
that's news. I didn't know.
All of their power comes from oil shipments from outside their country.
Well, T-Bone Pickens's pitch throughout this election was that there's places, the 18-wheelers, there's room for natural gas to run those.
Right.
There's still room to have, utilizing the oil and gas that we need specifically, but we wouldn't be using nearly as much as we are today.
Exactly. And natural gas, as long as we still got some, and we will for a while.
According to him,
it's a good transition. It's a good transition, better than foreign oil and better than coal plants, too.
According to him, we have natural gas like Saudi Arabia's got oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, although certainly it's the renewable sources that are the ultimate future, but...
there's transitions between one
exactly,
to the other.
Whether... Exactly. Well, this was just so stimulating and so many presentations I didn't even get to hear. Imagine if I heard all... Actually, it would be... we had 6 each time, or 12 presentations after the 3 keynoters made presentations, and I only heard 3 of them, 3 of the 15 presentations. And so...
Did you make an effort to tape them, have somebody record
Well,
them?
I do have, and I just don't know the quality. I got this little, 4 minutes from Peter Sinclair, and next week, if the quality of the keynote address is good, I will broadcast it as part of the show next week. So I just have to double check. He was moving around from the podium, and that's where I had the mic, and so maybe it didn't come out. So I haven't had a chance to listen to that closely or do any editing. So we'll let you know, folks, on that. And
it's
just
certainly...
remember, in fact, we're going to play a spot right now. We'll take a little break, just a couple minutes, and play some PSAs. That's important public service announcements, including, as somebody said in one of the sessions, well, where can we get trained? Where can we send high school students to get trained in this new way? We
here
have the program.
At Henry.
That's right. And so the HFCC alternative energy degree is one of the spots coming up right here. So take a close listen, folks, and we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal.
Energy Hog to team! Infiltrate the house and waste some energy!
No problem! It's got leaky windows!
And no added insulation!
Perfect! Now go wild and waste some wattage!
The Mitchell House. A house like many others, except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy is being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs!
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding! What about the thermostat?
Not too grammable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on! Someone's home!
And he's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star! That's it! Get out of there! I'll get you, energyhog.org!
Hey! Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. 2009 not only marks the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College, but it also marks the beginning of a brand new degree program here at HFCC. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
And that is the new HFCC Alternative Energy Degree, a two-year program, which is a very diverse number of offerings. I mean, one of the high school counselors that came to the Energy Summit this morning was asking, what do I tell my students? I mean, what's the name of the job that they're trying to train for? Well, good luck. I mean, you know, I was saying, I was thinking, I didn't want to jump in here, but that people need to be trained in every aspect, and science, of course. Electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, as Ned knows, architecture, community design, you know, basic biology and botany, too, if you're talking about life systems and energy reduction. Go ahead, Ned.
There are 32 categories on the printed sheet about the program.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after all, those who don't know the history of the Henry Ford Community College and its association with the Henry Ford Trade School, after all, during the trade school time, they were learning things that were necessary in the turn of the century and the 20th century, and this is the 21st century continuation of the Ford Trade School and its initiatives, which are still carried on here.
Peter Sinclair responded to this question, like, what are the jobs going to be called? Well, a number of things, you know, a wind energy installer, whatever, but you don't know that now, but you're going to need science and math, and again, the various aspects of mechanical, electrical engineering that are important, as well as a general knowledge of environmental processes which come from chemistry, physics, botany, zoology. And the program also has classes in business. I mean, how do you start a new business? A lot of these businesses are going to be brand new. They're going to be built from the ground up, whether it's batteries or building wind generators or whatever. But these, so you have to know how to get involved with the startup. And, you know, maybe you'll have to do several jobs if you're one of only five or six people in the new business. So the whole thing about, I want to learn in high school how I can get one particular job, which I'll keep for the rest of my life. That's not going to happen, folks. You better learn everything you can.
Well, right here on this list, we have a program in architectural construction technology at the college.
That's part of it. Yep.
And if you notice, they're listed here. As an architect, I'm getting bombarded with green. Right now we're talking about roofs.
Yep.
I'm getting calls and information from a company wanting to say, you need to help. You need help in doing a green roof where we're actually growing things on roofs.
Yeah.
Those that have been to the F-150 truck here at the Rouge plant, if you've seen the latest tour, that's what they have there.
And I had forgotten this, but many years ago, I think it was 79 or whatever, the city of Dearborn had to put in an extra building in its city hall complex, and they put a green roof in then. They planted grass. They had, you know, a couple feet of dirt and grass, and now the water that comes down doesn't go into the sewers and overflow the sewers. It grows the grass on the roof, and it's great insulation from the hot sun, too, you know, to have the water and the wet dirt there, as well as the grass, which cleans the air. And so there's a number of ways to do green roofs, whether it's from actual plants, you know, up there, or other kinds of designs that absorb or maintain the heat, deflect it in various ways. And Peter showed one, too, which is, you know, in sunnier places, it's just a mirrored surface, and right above it, there's little tubes of fluid of some sort, and they heat the water. And then, as you were saying, it doesn't have to immediately come back down and be hot water, but they keep the heat for when it's colder at night and use it for energy generation too. That's not in Dearborn Rooster yet, but I'm just saying, oh, there's so many ways to do green, and it must be really exciting for architects today and challenge for yourself to keep up after many years in the business.
There's always somebody that knows more about it than you do, and you know, they become a resource for you. For example, you know, when you go to a theater, you would think, you know, the architect figured out this seating plan so that everybody could see exactly the slope of the floor. Well, guess what? The seating manufacturers provide that service for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you, after having that experience, once they start paying attention, the seats are not all the same size in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As you go down rows, you'll see some are 22 inches, some are 20 inches. So after that experience, I always pick out the right size seat, and you get the stagger heads. So there's always a resource person that knows. You can't know everything, and it changes. Everything changes.
I was going to say, in high school, folks, the counselors have to tell the kids, you can't just get training in high school and then have a job for life. You need to constantly be updating your skills in all areas, and then following the trends where the job is going, where the new technology is. And it's an exciting process. As a teacher, I always have to keep up on the latest things so I can teach the latest things. And it's, I don't care that I have to relearn it all from last year or from 5 years ago. I'm excited by that. I'm excited to be able to tell other people about the new directions and the new ideas. And so it can be very exciting. The internet is a key resource. Need to go on
nowadays,
the internet
absolutely
almost every day for information that you specifically need, in addition to what you might see on some of the, you know, cable news stations, which are kind of outdated. They're not cutting edge. Well, I just want to turn in our show. We talked about 40 minutes about the Energy Summit today, and just a couple of articles from the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald that I wanted to touch on. First of all, the bad news is that the Dearborn Public Schools have announced that they're going to have to cut the budget for next year.
Why?
Well, they expect to get $11 million less money to run the place.
Why? Because home taxes are coming down?
Declining state aid. Well, you know, it's the
state of Michigan. Oh, declining state aid portion, yes.
Yeah. Well, certainly the home, that's right. The state has less money, and so they can't pay the same amounts.
Right.
The state's in an economic crisis. With all the homes that are in foreclosure, there's nobody to pay the taxes on them. So, yeah, home taxes are declining. But remember, all that taxation money goes directly to Michigan state government. It doesn't go first to the local district. So it's split up, and they try to do it fairly in Lansing so that most districts get the same minimal amount to run their schools, whereas there used to be some rural schools that based on the taxes they got from the few, you know,
right,
you know, sparse homesteads in their area had almost no money to fund a school operation. So they expect an $11 million shortfall, and they're going to they're looking at the ways they're going to have to cut the budget. Now, first of all, I have to say, if you've been following this each year,
we
usually talk about it. It's almost $6 to $12 million less every year. This is more than last year. I know that they're going to have to find to cut. What more can we cut? And Dearborn Schools have, I think, our population of students anyway is still growing. Maybe not the adults in Dearborn, but
I think you're right about that.
And
the new immigrants have a lot of kids.
But $11 million less money to spend? Well, again, they have to plan for that. And I'd like to bring Brian Winston, who is the Dearborn Public School Superintendent, on sometime in the next couple months to talk about this. But these are the areas they outline where the cuts will have to come from. Winston has done several major studies since he became superintendent last year by professionals, I mean real independent professionals, Plant Moran and other companies like that, comparing us with other districts. And here's just interesting. Here's where you think the changes will have to come. Uh, Okay, they explain about the sales tax thing and the economy being bad. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, just turn the page, Koronek. I'll get there.
How about the two language situations, learning English?
Well, they don't bring that up. Apparently, it's not a so important. Here it comes. These are the areas that cuts will be made in. Salaries. Projected cut of $5 million. They say in a business where you're 85 to 95% staff and salaries, cuts have to come from here. Now, that will come from...
that makes sense if it's 85%.
Yeah, it's not just teachers, but they're talking about having to actually lay off, which also means fire, probably, forever. Administrators, central office staff, operational staff, maintenance staff. They've identified where that could happen from that study from Plant Moran. So they're going to have to... Half of that $11 million almost will come from salaries, from people... being laid off.
Usually there's more administrators than you need.
About that, but that's true. I mean, with our population of students growing, and I know they have not reduced class sizes in Dearborn, they're still quite large. 35 or more, I think, is the average in a class in Dearborn Public Schools. They can't fire any more real full-time teachers. Now, some support teachers, teachers that are not teaching full-time, they may have to go. State aid reduction, DPS may lose $1.8 million if the state cuts per pupil funding by $100 a student. Cipriano said DPS currently has about 18,000 students. So
what is DPS?
Dearborn Public Schools.
Oh.
Okay. The district will possibly incur a pension increase of 1%. So, in other words, this will cost the district about $1 million. Oh, this is where it's coming from.
They could take that out of there.
Yeah, but it means the people that are already retired... or the pension fund they're trying to build up for those that might retire is going to be a little less. Yeah, so look out. If you're not already retired, you got another reason to keep working. Okay, say inflation is going to cost the district another million. So this is where the $11 million came from anyway. And so other than those six areas, and compensation is the big one, and salaries, everything else is on the table. And they say...
really got the union to contend with.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of factors. Again, three of the district's largest contracts with personnel expire on June 30th, so they're going to renegotiate those and see where it goes. Healthcare is always going up, of course, and they talk about energy costs. Boy, they need to do some retrofitting of some alternative energy on their buildings, don't they?
Yeah, well, that's going to cost money.
Oh, it's really because the buildings are so old. The infrastructure is so old on most of these buildings.
What do you think the considered average good life of a building is?
Well, I just know that I think, and I may be wrong, a majority of our public school buildings in Dearborn were built in the 1920s.
So we're talking
now. Some of them have been retrofitted with better heating, but I know a lot of them still don't even have.
We're talking about 60 years.
Don't even have decently insulated windows.
Right.
And just retrofitting double pane glass insulated windows in these places would cost a fortune. Although that would be the place to start. That would be a big payback immediately if they didn't already have that kind of thermal window installed. So,
where would the money come from to do that? That's the problem.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It would have to be, I don't know, bond issue or sacrifice something else in order to build that
direction. But what always amazed me? I mean, if you tore the thing down and rebuilt it, that's not exactly a cheap process.
Well, we're not talking about national things usually on this show, but of course the stimulus package, which is still being debated as we talk today.
Oh, that's right. There's money. Can it come to everybody?
One part of that $800 billion is for the schools and for school infrastructure improvements, which means make those buildings more energy efficient and get some renewable energy power systems for them. That would be so helpful. Now, I know Republicans have been carping
but some of them are just in shambles.
Yes,
another issue.
Yeah, some of the buildings
depend on the districts.
Depends on the district. We might have one that's. I know a few years ago, the Bryant Middle School had the bad pollution problem from.
Asbestos.
Mold in the walls, in the ceiling. For leaky ceiling and whatever was up there, asbestos or whatever, the mold started growing. And then there was toxic pollution in the air. So they retrofitted some air purifiers and bigger ventilation systems, but they didn't have money enough to replace the roof. They didn't have money enough to tear down and build another building, which is what they really should have done. And so they still have all that toxic mold up there, but the air is going faster and there's more air coming in from the outside.
Well, if it's black mold, they'll close the school.
Well, they did several, you know, energy studies by various health consultants, and they said, well, it might still smell bad, but it's not toxic to most people.
I have a personal experience myself with a school with that problem. The state will shut it down.
Yeah, if it's a certain level, there must be a criteria.
Away with something like that, that doesn't sound.
Well, apparently, Bryant wasn't that serious, or somebody would have said that, because it was a big to do for about 2 years, and now all the retrofits, and it's just that they didn't have money enough, I know, to tear down and start over, or take the roof off and start over, even, which is what the good fix would have been. So, and whenever you do that, folks, as Peter Sinclair was saying, make sure it's more energy efficient and secure, whether you have to put a new window in your house or anything. There's Energy Star rated appliances. Never, never put the money out for something that's less efficient.
Is that, for example, I got door walls in my house that are 50 years old. Well, and they're wonderful doors, but I'll tell you, they leak air like you can't believe. But if I could replace them at $1,000 or $1,500 and still get a tax credit,
I believe,
it would be worth
and,
it.
And in the Democrats' writing, anyway, of the stimulus bill, money goes back in for these kinds of reimbursement for energy upgrades, energy-saving upgrades. And I think that's essential, as well as the higher standards for everybody, including business and industry, which everybody carps over initially. But it's already been proven the way to do it,
well,
and it'll
puts
save
people
everybody
to work. The
it
guy
does.
That's building the new door wall, and there's a new installer taking out the old one and replacing the new one. If you give somebody, instead of giving money away, why don't they just give people tax advantages for buying a, like they're talking about, buy a new house, you get $15,000, buy a car, you get a tax break. Mm-hmm. Fix your home so it's more green, more energy efficient. Instead of giving money away, all you got to do is give the person the tax break so he's not giving you the money, so you don't have to worry about giving it to somebody to turn the wheel.
Yep, all of our lives are going to be turning around these issues one way or the other. Here's just an important announcement that was in both the papers this week. For the people in Dearborn, we know Public Service Day is supposedly the once a week, and it's, I can't remember here, it's whether it's the first week and the second week.
Of a particular month.
First and third or something. And you have to have your car off the street the day that your trash is being picked up. So your trash day is the day that if the streets are clear, they will come down and do cleanup of the streets and sweeping or plowing or whatever. Well, there's been so much snow on the ground, as you know, folks, over the last couple of weeks.
In East Dearborn, what would you do? Where would you put your car?
That's it.
On your roof?
That's it. Because there's no place for people to move their cars off the street anymore, they are stopping Public Service Day parking enforcement or no parking enforcement. Okay, so for February and March, don't worry about it, folks. But when you get to the week of April 6th through 10th, they'll want your cars off the street again on the day that your trash is picked up, and we'll go back over that later. But you're not required to remove your parked vehicles from the street on their designated public service days until the week of April 6th through 10th. Now
seems a little frequent, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was never home all of each day, but I would swear that on some of those public service days, nothing happened on my street. So if people had to go to the trouble the night before to move their cars to their driveway or some other place, and then nothing happened, that kind of hurt. In fact, they reduced the number of public service days. It was every week. But then I think somebody said, you haven't done anything for weeks here.
I've never
and now it's only twice a month.
Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, I don't think they do it in Dearborn Heights.
Well, no, I don't know. There's no off-street parking where I live. But still, I see that that's an interesting thought. But I think we need it more for the snow than any other time. Say, look at this Sunday, everybody take your car.
Do not misunderstand.
Go to the shopping center, park your car, and we'll plow your street.
If the city of Dearborn announces, either on their website or over their blasting sirens, because they don't have a relationship with Henry Ford Community College's WHFR yet, snow emergencies mean you got to get your cars off the street, even if there's no place for that. They'll tow them away if necessary in order to get the snowplows
through. Take them to a shopping center parking lot in the neighborhood. There's plenty of neighborhood shopping centers.
Yeah, they may allow that. Yeah, I know
you could organize that by block very easily.
The city does some advising. I know my daughter doesn't really have any place to park their cars except on the street around her house in East Dearborn here, and it's a ways away, you know, which means she has to drive her car over there, leave it, and somebody's got to drive her back, or she's walking like four blocks in the winter in order to get back home from where her car is.
Should be done on the weekend. It makes more sense. Give the workers Monday off.
Well, it's a difficult issue. Again, your city is trying to give you services that you don't get in Detroit. Sorry if anybody in Detroit's letting me know. They don't understand. They don't do snow plowing in Detroit.
If you live on a residential street in Detroit and it snows, good luck. That's it.
Yeah.
You get two ruts for people driving, and you're plowed in on either side.
This is not an advertisement for Ford Motor Company here, folks, but Ford announced on January 27th, and this is in the Press and Guide, the changes to their global marketing organization to create a more consistent and compelling connection with customers worldwide. Because if you can't make a lot of money in the U.S., maybe somebody will want your stuff outside this country. And we are competing with the whole world for the world market, after all. And they appointed Elena Ford, 42, the director of global marketing, sales, and service operations. I just wonder, it doesn't say here, is she related to the Ford family at all?
Probably not.
Doesn't say. Well, Ford is maybe a common name in this area. I don't know. But this is one of those initiatives in Michigan. Companies in Michigan, it's not just making products needed for Michigan, and we definitely need alternative energy products of all kinds of stuff. And better cars, too, but that are alternative energy, renewable energy powered. But for the world, you know, and Ford and GM, they have profit that they're making worldwide.
They are.
And
guess what the most popular car in China is? A Buick.
Oh, a Buick. That's right.
Yeah. How could that
probably
be?
Not for a while. Again, they're BYD company, the one that Warren Buffett has invested $200 million in through his company. That's the biggest new Chinese automaker of electric cars. And there was three of them down at the auto show, but they won't be in this country until
the Brilliant,
2010. Right. Brilliant, they're
called. Did they say they were electric?
BYD, yes. Well, I think they have some gas-powered ones, but they're hybrids and electrics. And that's what they'll primarily be selling here in 2011.
I couldn't even tell where that car came from. It was a pretty good secret.
They're already selling them in China.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll sell them in China for a couple of years to see how they work out. I mean, how the cars hold together. And they've gotten decent reviews from the few car reviewers here and testers in this country that have gotten close to them. I wouldn't highly recommend them as being superior to anything we do here or some cars from some other countries. But they're already started. They're already rolling. They're already producing these things. Okay, where are we? You know, so we got to keep moving. But good for Ford. And another Ford is in the Ford organization, even if she isn't part of the original Ford family. She's in charge of the entire global marketing, sales, and service operations for Ford for the whole world. So congratulations, Elena, and good luck, for sure.
Well, you know what? On second thought, these could be Ford family girls.
Well, that's one way to move ahead, I guess. The family knows you, but, you know, a couple of people in the Ford family. I mean, for example, Edsel Ford was head
of
our board of trustees, and he was tested as head of Ford Australia for a while before they brought him back to Dearborn. And he was the head of Ford Motor here for a while. But he didn't like the limelight and the focus. And he, very great guy, great public service-oriented guy, he and his family. They helped the college here. As I said, he was on our board of trustees for a while.
This is
Edsel Ford II.
Oh, I don't know him.
Right. And
you don't hear much about
him. He just didn't like the limelight and the focus, and maybe didn't like the stress, you know, of being CEO, too. And so he is, I'd say, I think he still has some position with Ford, of course, part of the Ford family, but he's not their CEO.
But William Ford's son is the chairman of the board.
Mullally is
he's the president. The
president, Mullally. Right. Okay, the chairman of the board is William Ford's son, whoever
William
that is.
William Ford's son, right.
I don't know who that is offhand, but
his name is Bill, too, I think.
Goes around. Okay. So I hope this show has stimulated you somewhat, folks. I'm very enthused. So much stuff I didn't know, and I thought I was trying to keep up, you know,
so
every day.
Keep your clunker is the message of the day.
Yeah, and definitely look for a plug-in hybrid. So, well, what's the difference between a hybrid and a plug-in? Well, a hybrid gets you maybe 10% better gas mileage. It does have an electric motor and batteries in it, too. But the plug-in hybrid, like the Volt, the concept is the batteries will store enough energy that when you start driving around, the first 40 miles will be electric power only. And then the batteries will drain down to a point that they need recharging. And then a gasoline motor, very small little gasoline motor in your car, will kick in, not to drive the car, like a hybrid switches over. From one motor to the other motor. But it only charges the battery enough to keep the battery up to keep the car going. You'll go 500, 600, 700 miles, depending on the size of the gas tank, on a fill-up that way. And the effective, with the Volt, they say, the miles per gallon for somebody that goes 50 miles a day, in other words, the 40 miles on electricity only, another 10 miles with the engine, you know, kicking in, 150 miles to a gallon. So not 30 miles to a gallon,
what
not 40.
What it translates to, right?
Yeah, that if you only go a little bit beyond the 40 miles each day, well, 150 miles to a gallon.
Well, that depends on the cost of the vehicle. If you're paying
$45,000. Well, the Volt, that's it. The Volt, they think, is going to be $40,000 to $45,000, and that's why those brilliant cars from China, they're thinking of coming here with plug-in hybrids at about $20,000. So,
well, I think the Prius for 2009 is a plug-in. There is a plug-in.
No, that's the next. They haven't quite got to the plug-in Prius yet, but it's coming quick. It may, because they're competing
then
with
the 2010.
They're going to be here probably a couple months earlier than the Chevy Volt, just for marketing reasons. You know that the Toyota people want to keep the focus on them, and they're going to probably. GM's Volt is probably going to force them to come out a couple months in advance.
The Volt doesn't look
like a plug-in hybrid Prius.
It's not as interesting as that Prius. That Prius, you know, the way it works, it's a sedan, it's a little station wagon. I hope that one does that, but it doesn't look like it does it.
Well, we'll find out. We'll see how it's going to go.
Time will tell.
We live in interesting times, which was an old Chinese curse. It's a curse to live in interesting, but it means there's so much change. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do next? But out of change, and this is Confucius himself talk about Chinese, wasn't very confusing actually. Confucius said that out of change comes opportunity, out of crisis comes opportunity.
Well, you know what the North American Car of the Year was at the auto show. The Hyundai Genesis.
Okay, we know you had a test drive in one of those, didn't
you?
Yes,
I did.
Okay. So
nasty V8 engine. Nothing but exciting.
Keep it together out there, folks. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Thank you, Ned, for coming by.
My pleasure, as always.
And let's keep stirring things up. This is WHFR Dearborn. Stay tuned.